And we're back with an all-new episode of Keep It. I'm Ira Madison III.
I'm Louis Fertel, and I already have FOMO for all the summer things I'm missing, but we'll catch up on. Anyway, it's making me anxious.
I'm Aida Osman. I'm wearing a beanie, and I'm feeling like a soft butch. Hello.
You know what? It's a welcoming butch.
Yeah.
Thank you. It's like, I make macadamia nut cookies in my kitchen, but there's only organic rosemary that I grow in my garden. I don't know.
And there's a cookie for everybody. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's like an inviting Nickelodeon gnome.
Stop calling me a gnome. This is the second time. You think I didn't hear it before. I heard it before we started recording.
You're pretending there's a category of gnomes. There's one gnome. It's David the Gnome, voiced by Tom Bosley of Happy Days fame.
There was one gnome.
No, there's an old film called A Gnome Named Gnorm. I don't know if any of you have seen A Gnome Named Gnorm, but it was a horrible movie that I watched as a young child, and that's a second category of gnomes.
As in, okay. His name is Norm with a G, and they pronounce the G. Guys, the G in gnome is silent. The pun doesn't work out.
Yep. A gnome named Gnorm. I know, right?
Interesting. Okay.
I did see Gnomeo and Juliet. Sorry about that.
Oh, I forgot about that.
One of the many indignities that have befallen Emily Blunt.
You know, she did it to herself.
I agree. Yeah.
Yeah. I want to support the sis. Because I do love my redheads, but I don't know. She needs to be making more movies like...
Edge of Tomorrow?
Yeah, she needs to be making more movies like The Edge of Tomorrow, which is a classic, a Tom Cruise action movie. It's not easy to get. Not everybody has that.
Yeah, right.
I'm kidding. A lot of people are in those movies.
I'm going to say, you want her to achieve the level of, say, Michelle Monaghan? That's what you want? Okay, right. No offense to Michelle Monaghan.
If you haven't been filtered through the Mission Impossible franchise, what are you doing?
Right.
Sitting here in bliss.
Yeah, that's true.
In bliss with a good career.
Viola Davis is in one.
Really?
Is one of the Blue is the Warmest Color girls in those movies? Yes, Lea Seydoux, who is also in the James Bond movies. That's range.
Also, I was wrong. I was thinking about Angela Bassett being in Mission Impossible Fallout. Viola Davis has not been in one. She has, however, been clomping around in the Suicide Squad franchise.
That's true. Also, Viola Davis was in Black Hat, the Chris Hemsworth action movie. I want to say
no
though,
one
that
saw that.
I don't mean to endorse it, by the way. But that is almost compensation for the fact that Angela Bassett should have an action franchise. I know we have that show of hers on Fox, but that's not enough.
Yeah.
Strange Days could have been a franchise.
Right. Ooh.
I don't know.
Nice take. Yeah.
Or What's Love Got to Do with It? You know, I would have loved to
see
Tina
Turner. I would not like to see more of that.
I think she could take on other abusive musicians.
Oh, as in other harrowing stories in rock? Who else could she play? Like Nina Simone or something?
Yeah. No, what if the sequel was like Tina Turner went and looked up John Lennon?
Oh, okay. That is senseless, but all right. Yeah.
Yeah. It was like, let's talk about this bitch, okay?
She stops Mark David Chapman. She swipes the Catcher in the Rye out of his hand and says, stop it.
Yeah. Okay. I think I would love to see Angela Bassett take down Marilyn Manson.
That too.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out what's the level of abuse before I chime in. Like, does she punch Tommy Mottola or is that not enough? Is that enough? Does she have, like, discretion?
I think that's enough.
Good. I'm on board.
Yeah.
I'm on board.
Okay,
I'm
she helps Mariah jump out of that window and into the pool.
Makes a cast. She ties a bunch of scarves together and like she just cascades down the side of the mansion.
Or she's in the car with Mariah when they go and get fast food the one time she sneaks out of the house.
With DeBrat.
With DeBrat.
Yes, DeBrat, yes. Oh my God, yes. Yeah.
If Mariah Carey wants French fries, Mariah Carey's gonna get French fries.
That just is a testament to how vividly Mariah explained that situation in the studio since we all feel like we lived it.
Yeah. You know what? No one has ever written as vivid a memoir as Mariah Carey. But our guest today did write a lovely memoir. I'm only lightly shading him because we're friends. J.P. Brammer is on the show this week to talk about his book of advice columns / memoirs / essays. Hola, Poppy.
Very cute. I can't believe how long we've had Grindr in the world. That's what that book acquainted me with. Like, you know, we always think of like our generation is obsessed with things like AIM or remembering AIM or LimeWire. Mm-hmm. When these things had really limited shelf life or they only existed for a couple years, whereas Grindr is now like a full arc of our lives, you know, been on it for a decade plus.
Truly.
How long has Grindr been around? Like, were you guys like drawing dicks in the sand? Like, is that how old this is? Like,
not quite that old, yes.
Okay, okay. Just
I also came to it a little bit late, but I've been on it probably 8-9 years.
Yeah, same. Mm. You know, I do still miss gay.com and Adam for Adam.
Oh, wow.
I was on gay.com too. As a joke, I was too scared. I put up a picture of Ann Coulter as my profile picture and still got messages.
I wonder what gays you were attracting with that.
They'll message anybody as long as they're white.
Well, it doesn't get whiter, sweetie. So,
Ann Coulter, please call me a faggot to my face. There's a certain sect of Chicago gays that would have loved to match up with Ann Coulter and, you know, like have a brunch with her.
She allegedly, that was her whole thing for a while, that she had some gay friends. I mean, she'll take anybody, but okay. We can move on from Ann Coulter. I apologize.
It's also Pride Month, and we are going corporate. I'm kidding. We're going to offer some recommendations of things that we're currently enjoying in music, film, and books. And then we're going to get into the down and dirty and seedy world of celebrities asking people to sign NDAs to have sex with them. We'll be right back. This month, Keep It has been included in Amazon Music's Pride collection, along with Love It or Leave It, because allegedly John Lovett is gay, and a host of other amazing LGBTQ+-led podcasts. To check them out, head over to Amazon Music to listen for free. Brought to you by Chase Bank. It's Pride.
Oh, there's just one big sponsor now. Okay, great. Mm-hmm.
You know what? Eventually, it'll just be Amazon's Gay Pride.
Right.
If we're being honest.
It'll be easier. Yeah.
Jeff Bezos will buy Pride.
And he can have it.
Certainly, if you want like a $13 singlet for a gay warehouse party, that's where you go.
Mm. Did you do that for this weekend, Lewis?
I was going to say, are we slaves to the system?
Am I going
to
see you in a singlet for the first time?
No.
Shimmery. Rainbow.
But I know it's available to people out there if they would like to have it. But
yeah.
Not me, Lewis. Either. Yeah.
Okay. I think some of our listeners would love that. That's my queer recommendation this week, that Lewis drop a singlet photo.
Oh my! Your queer recommendation is pimping me out. Okay.
Listen, baby, we can make the big bucks. They could call you Turnpike because they got to pay to get on and they got to pay to get off.
Oh my, good Lord. Good Lord.
That is one of my favorite pieces of dialogue from the Nichelle Nichols exploitation film, Truck Turner.
I fucking love me some Nichelle Nichols. Groundbreaker. The kids don't know old Star Trek anymore. Yeah.
Yeah. If you have not seen Truck Turner, it is a wild turn for her. She plays a female pimp.
I feel stupid that I haven't seen this. Anyway.
But that is not a queer recommendation. That's just a pure, innocent, fun, good old time recommendation. But I figured it's Pride. You know, what should we be telling the children, the girls, to read, to watch, to listen to?
To consume, to look at.
Well, I'll start with, among queer movies, I think my favorite one of the past, whatever, 5 years I've seen is Beach Rats. You ever seen Beach Rats?
I did see Beach Rats. And you know what? I wrote a not glowing review of Beach Rats for the Daily Beast at the time.
Not you undercutting his first rec.
Well, it's a slice of life movie about this kind of like young adult played by Harris Dickinson, who is poof, brutally hot. I'm not saying it's like a definitive queer movie in any way, but like his weird alienation from people is interesting. It's made by the woman Eliza Hittman, who also did the recent Never, Rarely, Sometimes, Always, which if you haven't seen that is like just unbelievably harrowing movie about
I adore that film.
Yeah, about a girl who is getting an abortion. That's what the whole movie is about. But this movie, there are certain movies you just feel like you want to live in for a little while. Not even because it's completely comfortable, but because it sets a scene so well. And that movie does that. And the story is interesting and feels organic and not contrived in the way that like most screenplays do. It's never like, oh, we're getting to the redemptive part, or we're getting to the part where he, you know, stands up for himself or whatever. It's not like that. It feels true to life, and I recommend that movie.
I should rewatch that film because I actually love revisiting art that, you know, you liked before, and to see like if you still like it, or, you know, revisiting something that, you know, you weren't that fond of in the beginning, to see if your opinion has changed years later. And I was a really big fan of Never Really, Sometimes Always. So I think that revisiting Beach Rats in the context of that film, I might like it a bit more.
Y'all need to start saying NRSA. It's too many words for both of you.
And also, like, I always forget one of them, you know? It's it's like ENFJ. I'm like, oh, God, which one's F? You know, et cetera, yeah.
Yes. Never Rarely Maybe So.
Never Rarely We'll See. Yeah.
Although it made so much sense when you get to the end of the movie, spoiler alert, and it's like it's her answering the questions that you have to answer.
Correct.
When you're getting an abortion, and it's always, is it never, rarely, sometimes, or always? But, child, I was like, what is this title?
Right. And and they repeat it several times for all the questions she has to answer. But anyway, Aida, your turn.
Yes, I have been forcing myself, I mean, of course, enjoyably so, being an African, a child of an African immigrant, but just watching a lot of diaspora queer movies and trying to find as much of that content as possible. So most of my recommendations are going to be that. But I recently watched a film called Rafiki, which is Swahili for the word friend, before, not to be confused with the character from Lion King. So I know where y'all bitches' heads is about to go.
I was definitely not about to make a joke about Rafiki
you weren't.
From the
it
Lion
wasn't.
King.
It wasn't coming to your mind. It wasn't something about... And I'll just fast forward.
I was about to hold up a baby.
Yeah, and slightly lick your hand and push it right directly to its forehead. Metaphor for lesbian love. Anyway.
Voiced by Robert Guillaume in the movie, by the way. Going on.
It's a story about two young women in Kenya where, of course, lesbian relationships are banned. And, of course, the movie, too, is also banned. And them just trying to navigate what their world looks like when they're falling in love in a place where it's not okay. And I think it's interesting, too, this movie is important for all people. But we are so tired of oppressive storylines in the United States because we've seen it so many times. But there are very real and palpable stories that are of oppression that are still going on in other places. And that's where I'm willing to entertain those kind of storylines. You see it in a different world. So Rafiki is a big movie. Watch it. Wonderful. Another film, same thing, to a gay couple, Nas and Malik. And I think I've recommended this on the podcast before, but y'all need to get with it and watch it.
I reviewed Nas and Malik at one point.
I remember this.
Loved that film.
I love that. Yes. Two black Muslim boys navigating the space of being queer in Brooklyn. It's beautiful. A lot of these things, it's just so refreshing to see the imagery. You've never seen it before. So those are my two movies.
I think that is a gorgeous, gorgeous film.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Yeah.
Makes me want to be a gay boy.
You don't want to be one of those.
I know. Y'all seem to have it rough. Just running around like little monkeys.
Not untrue. You put it succinctly as far as I'm concerned.
Like Rafikis.
Like little Rafikis.
Voiced by Robert Guillaume. Yes.
Oh my God, Benson.
That's exactly right. Yes, Emmy winner.
My king, Benson, from the TV show Soap. He was the butler, but then he got his own spinoff where he was helping a white man run for office.
that's it.
And
that's
then
it.
He ran for office at the end of like the series of Benson. 70s TV shows were wild, you know? Yeah.
And sort of a dead zone. We've lost a lot of them to time. You know, people don't know about Benson anymore.
And the spinoffs were like wild reboots of TV shows. You know, and like it wasn't just like, oh, Joey, like someone's moving to LA. They were like full like concept reboots where it's like, oh, this is going to be like set in the world of politics now.
Oh, right.
For no reason.
You know that there's a show called the, I believe, The Brady's, where There were several Brady Bunch reboots with basically all the same cast, with maybe one or two of the kids exchanged out. And there was a version where Mike Brady was the president of the United States and Carol Brady was the vice president. This is what we did. And it was like a drama. This is what we did to television audiences. We were so...
There was like, too much money.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah.
There's too much money in circulation.
Yeah, I don't think I've seen it, but I've definitely read about that. I do remember reruns of like the Brady Wives.
Oh, the Brady Brides. Yes. That was a short-lived show with Maureen McCormick and Eve Plum. Yes, Marsha and Jan.
Yeah. That was the era where... As long as the show was spun off from an initial show, they would just sort of air the spinoff episodes in syndication in that time slot.
Right.
Sometimes. And you'd be like, what the fuck am I watching?
No, you're like, what moment in time is this? Yeah. Was this acceptable? It's so confusing. All right. I have a queer recommendation for music that is historical.
Oh, let's go.
Okay. Somebody who was not talked about in the context of queerness. I mean, he was never out in his lifetime, but now I feel like the people who know him, that's all they talk about is how he was gay and everybody knew it.
Freddie Mercury.
Good guess. Luther Vandross. Mm. If you read specifically his album, because he's not talked about as an album artist a lot either, Never Too Much from the early 80s, you could bop to Luther Vandross. People really, I think now, like casual music consumers, think of him as the Dance With My Father guy.
But he
really had some fucking music with a groove back in those days. As an album, it is flawless, like a 5-star album. And... often forgot. It's also just like you don't think of smooth, buttery vocals as necessary to dance music, but it's awesome to see them in concert or hear them in concert. So I really recommend that.
It is never too much to
never
talk
too
about
much,
Luther Vandross.
Never too much. Never too much. Yeah.
I love that song. I'm constantly listening to Never Too Much.
Mm-hmm. I miss a Jerry curled man. Yeah. That's what I miss. Mm. A shirt tucked in, a tight belt, snapping at the wrist. And a cherry curl.
You know.
Are you gonna just compose a poem for us? Okay.
I have to wonder, like, if I would have had a cherry curl back then.
I would say you would. I think you would have. Yeah.
You would have. Finger curls every day.
It's just like complicated on the sheets and stuff.
Oh yeah, but that's why you got a little bonnet. You tie that up. You got your silk pillowcases. Mm-hmm. It wouldn't have fazed you. It would have been second nature. Mm. It would have been your life, Ira. It would have been your life.
I like this version of me, little Jared Curl.
I have a couple music ones. So you guys remember her from Ooh. Oh God, that was horrible. I'm gonna let Young MA do all the rapping and singing. However,
Were saying ooh. Okay, you were giving out some like little whale.
A whale. Sorry, there was no dedication.
I love Young Ma. Mm. Okay,
my God, yo,
Young Ma and I shared a bill
for what? I think she goes by Young MA. I'm pretty sure, unless I'm wrong.
Probably is Young MA, but I like calling her Young Ma.
Young Mommy.
Okay, I like the hey Ma. You looking young?
She is from Brooklyn. She is from New York. It only makes sense that you would call her that. So
No, when I was on the Wendy Williams show, she was the musical guest.
Ooh, that wasn't on purpose. I didn't mean to do that.
I wanted to like go and like knock and say, hey, what's good? But I was like, I am not about to knock on a rapper's door.
No, you're not about to do that. One that consistently talks about having multiple guns. Yes. But check out her album, Herstory, which of course is a play on the word history, if you missed it. But she's just a wonderful rapper. She's one of the best lyricists in that realm right now. And I love her. I love her dearly.
I love her. You know what? Because I think constantly these women are like rapping about like sex and pussy and dick.
Yeah,
too much.
And wops and shit.
Young MA is always rapping about pussy.
Yeah, she should, because she stay in pussy.
She's great. Yeah, she's great. She's great.
Also, unfortunately, since you said the words Young Ma, I am now thinking about a prequel to the film Ma, starring maybe Keke Palmer.
I'd watch that, and she would be in it. She would sign up for that in an instant. You know that.
You know she would be great. I want to see her hit
it's in development.
The first time she hit a woman with her car. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it would also be like the bullies in school, like locking her up somewhere, and they'd say, you have to drink alone.
Right.
So then we know where she got Don't Make Me Drink Alone, where she got that from. Speaking of music, I do want to recommend our friend Vincent, who we talked about
all
the time. Last week, his album, There Will Be Tears, drops on Friday. Definitely listen to that. I was at the album listening party last night. It was fantastic.
With goddamn Billy Porter and Jeremy O'Harris, and it just looked like all my favorite black gay men.
You know.
No, you there.
That's what I do.
You're there. You are where the niggas are.
I got in by some chance. Also, weirdly, I just did an interview with Todrick Hall, and I want to say that I really enjoy his new album.
Oh, so you're a sellout and just become a fan of whoever meets you. How interesting.
Nice.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know what, Lewis?
Actually, no. I think a lot of his music is really good.
Yeah. I'm unable to be mean to people in person anymore. The skill's gone.
Oh, wow. You've lost the magic touch.
Bitch can't read a bitch. You can't read a bitch no more.
This is my pivot to nice, okay?
Oh,
I mean, I was pleasant to Jamila Jamil recently.
Whoa.
The pandemic changed.
This is
changed
some Perez
you.
Hilton on the Ellen DeGeneres show shit. Yeah.
I'm closing the Zoom. This is not what I signed up for.
Okay, so also, I also have two book recommendations.
Let's hear them.
In the midst of 100 Boyfriends by Brontez Purnell, which is beautiful writing. Beautiful writing. So you got to read that. And also a book by a friend of Lewis and I's, Jonathan Parks Ramage.
Oh, love him.
Yes, Daddy.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Yeah.
I want to be friends too. Yeah.
And boyfriend to Ryan O'Connell, if you're familiar with the show Special.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, you know, they're just making queer shit up in that house.
It's like we're a small, tight-knit community. It's weird.
We all know one another. Anyway. That's our queer recommendations this week.
I have no others. Everything else is strictly heterosexual. So the love of my life, heterosexuality and art.
My other recommendations are like tapestry artists. And I don't know if y'all are going to follow up. So
absolutely not. I think there's only one tapestry artist that Lewis likes.
Her name's Carol King, sweetie. Yes.
And it's too late, baby. It's too late now, Aida.
Yes.
All right, we'll be right back.
I didn't realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a backseat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills, so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Our guest today is the self-proclaimed Chicano, Carrie Bradshaw. And you know what? I agree.
You wanted career advice from Ira, right? Okay, go ahead.
A writer and advice columnist, he has just released his first book. Please welcome the writer of Hola Poppy, Poppy himself, J.P. Bramer, who, as my friend, I have never called you Poppy. And I feel like I should start doing it now.
Well, one thing I've learned from Grindr is that the bar for being called Poppy is pretty low. Like, I was a twink in college getting Hola Poppy, so it's really just anyone.
Okay.
And they just think they're being chummy as opposed to being what I guess the word would be, patronizing.
No, I think they're just horny.
Yeah.
And they have ideas. I think that's what's happening.
Let's talk a bit about you being the Chicano Carrie Bradshaw.
Sure, let's do it.
You know, how did you get into writing people advice? It started with Into, right? The RIP into the magazine from Grindr.
Rest in peace and power into. It started with me being a freelancer in New York City and not wanting to move back to my parents' farm in Oklahoma. And so I was like, okay, if I'm going to stay here, I need to make more money. I need to maximize the number of checks I can get out of Grindr, so I want to write a column every single week. Mm-hmm. But I don't really trust myself to come up with a new topic to write about every single week. I'm just not that smart. So that's when I thought, okay, if we do an advice column, people actually supply you with the prompt, and then you can sort of answer it. So I was going to do, like, purely satirical parody version of an advice column, with the joke being, like, what if Dear Abby was a gay Mexican man, and Dear Abby was on Grindr? So I thought it was going to be really funny. And then I started receiving letters that were really touching and intense, and I felt really bad for just making my little jokey jokes through the whole thing. So I was like, okay, fine, I'll start taking this more seriously. And the rest is history, really.
We were just talking before about how it's crazy to me realizing how long we've had Grindr.
Yes. Like,
as opposed to the things we mythologize from being, speaking on my behalf, a millennial youth, like things like Kazaa that lasted for actually 2 years, you know, as opposed to Grindr, which is like, no, we're going on a decade of Grindr. How do you feel about existing on Grindr for that long of a time? Like, are you happy Grindr is this big a part of our lives?
It is truly wild. And I've been on all of them. I remember being on Jacked. I remember being on Hornet, still on Scruff. And just the chokehold that app has on my life anyway, and my life trajectory is really wild to look at. I was on this thing called Adam for Adam to begin with. Have either of y'all heard of that before?
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. I love that Adam one... for Adam. It's a little, grimy. It was grimy, a little bit more ghetto.
Well, that's what I loved about it. It was like seedy in a way, and it kind of felt more correct with the vibe that I was going for. Yeah, in terms of whether Grindr is a good thing or not, I really have no idea. It's just been so entrenched in my daily activities now that I don't even think about it as this separate entity anymore. It's like, oh, got a spare minute. Guess I'll just look at the grid for a second. It's very that.
I will say that from its inception, it was that it did have that sort of seedy quality that, you know, like gay.com or Adam for Adam had. Gay.com, where I met my first male lover on. Some 42-year-old man in Chicago off the Sheridan stop. So shout out to him.
It was his dream to be described this way. So congrats to him.
He really made it with that one, yeah.
But it truly has become more a part of our lives, right?
Yeah.
It's like the way that like you used to even like not reference it in public, or you know, you would be like worried about like straight people seeing you with it, or even worried that like your friends think like you're just on Grindr or like looking for dick all the time, you know? It's like now friends are, you're just scrolling it like you scroll Instagram.
Yeah, there are entire Grindr subplots on mostly heterosexual TV shows on Netflix now. It's just become so, like, ubiquitous. I remember when I saw it on Elite, I was like, wow, we're here.
A top-tier show, by the
Period,
way.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Periodismo, absolutely.
Early in the book, there's a part where you talk about feeling overwhelmed by certain letters you got or feeling underqualified to respond to them. What certain things did you do in order to be able to respond to like a heavy question? Did you have to do a lot of research sometimes?
Yeah, there were some of them that I was just like, I just cannot answer this. I was receiving letters from people because Grindr was pushing the column through so many different places all around the world. Some of them were getting the column in countries or in places where homosexuality was criminalized, sometimes penalized by death. And I was like, I am not getting anyone killed with this dumb little column. I'm not going to be telling, like, one letter I got was, should I reach out to my crush and tell him how I feel? By the way, in my country, you can be put in jail for homosexuality. And I was like, imagine me in my little Brooklyn coffee shop writing a letter, being like, oh my God, go for it, sis. And someone ends up in jail. That's ridiculous. I'm not going to do that. That is absolutely ridiculous. Not worth it.
You're getting people broke down palaced with your column.
International scandal.
Though Go For It Sis is also a fine column name. So I mean,
I think that venture is off, that is the next Ola Poppy. That is what Bloop should have called their second column. They called it Dear Dad, which I think is so funny to this day. It's just like, let's just like run this through Google Translate and just keep it going.
Right. Bloop, which is another magazine imprint from Grindr. It is wild that Grindr has lasted so long, and it's truly had several different eras.
One thing I love to do is come up with new like gay media titles for like magazines or outlets. Like I think mine would be called Verse in all caps. That would be really cool. Or like Folks with an X and a zero. That would be edgy. Okay.
Mm. Oh, now you set my brain in motion. Now I want to create these things too. Yeah.
It's just a fun genre to think about because they all have the weirdest names.
Can I say, I know that it's completely an appropriate phrase, but
here we go.
Folks in general will always remind me of Barack Obama.
Right.
So I like every time I see like people even write like, you know, and to our trans folks, I'm like, did Barry write this?
Or say, Folks also just reminds me of like an old school stand up comic, like from the 60s or 70s, ending a joke. You know, like something, Folks, you know, yeah.
No Swifty, I thought about this before Folklore came out, but I did think of like folklore mythology. So I just imagine these like ethereal creatures with antlers and hooves and wings. They're like queer folk. I'm like, that sounds really illustrated.
What's so interesting is that your book, which is wonderful, by the way.
Thank you.
I'm so happy for you that this is out there in the world now. It's written, you know, half like advice columns, but really it's just, you know, a jump off for you to write, you know, like essays, you know, memoir-ish about your life. What has it been like going from the type of writing that you used to do on the internet to now you're like completely focused on framing things in context of advice columns? Like is advice columns all you write now? And are you tired of giving people advice?
Mm-hmm. So when I first left the pasture in Oklahoma, my main dream was I want to write a book. And it's only now that I actually have the time that I'm not working a desk job and I'm not worried about taking every single freelance gig that comes my way, have I realized that I've really negotiated my knack for writing with the industry and how that has really affected me, because I had ambitions of writing something really long, writing novels, fiction, stuff like that. And this book, you know, as much as I love it and as much as I'm proud of it, it very much is a representation of how I see I had to sort of negotiate myself into industry, how I had to really specialize in the op-eds, the essays, the things that really pop on the internet. Because that's really how I saw it as my only way in to this industry, because I didn't have any connections, you know, no one was going to fly me out for an internship to a coastal city. So I was just like, we got to do something, guy. What are we going to do? And so I really did sort of learn how to do, back then, what was the Huffington Post blog style of writing, where it was just like 5 things I wish I'd known before I came out as gay, like that sort of thing that was so prolific in that era of journalism. And I see its effects.
Ariana
still
was doing what the girls weren't doing, okay? Miss Ariana Huffington, okay?
She really was. She was a revolutionary back then. She was using people's free work on the daily. It was just I didn't get paid anything, but I used to make videos
for that woman. Yes, right.
She just loves sleep. She loves rest. She just wants you to have a good night's sleep and be your best. That's her whole thing.
I have wildly never been on the Huffington Post. I never worked for the Huffington Post.
That does seem crazy.
I always aspire to like write for Black Voices.
Oh, yeah.
It is kind of funny, like, there were these open channels, like HuffPo Latino, HuffPo Gay, or whatever, where I was just like, okay, this seems like more low-hanging fruit than the other stuff, because I went to a writing school at OU, it's not like I really knew what I was doing, so I wasn't gonna, like, do any hardcore reporting or anything, and I hate reporting, I hate interviewing people, it makes me nervous, I hate calling someone and being like, hey, can I bother you about this for, like, 20 minutes? So I was like, okay, I'll just work on these like identity sectors or whatever, which I think later that kind of sprung out with Ola Poppy. It's still very much in the DNA of this book, where it's like, it is a gay book. It is a Latino book. And I'm proud of it, but I'm really excited to maybe, you know, branch out from that later. And at some point, yes, stop giving people advice, because it is, it's a lot of work.
You pointed out something earlier though, that I think is so true, that for me, writing is I'm most productive as a writer when I'm just given a topic. Like, if I have to come up with something off the top of my head, that's way more daunting than, like, if a letter comes to me, it's like, you can write 30 words about it, or you can probably write 3,000 mm-hmm. words about it, you know?
Absolutely. I think that restrictions really bring out creativity, whereas, like, you have to do it within these parameters. What can you come up with? Whereas if you're just making everything up on your own, you know, sometimes it lends itself to really overwrought writing. It's stuff that you think is really good, and maybe no one is that interested in hearing. So I'm kind of thankful, in a way, for prompt culture. I really enjoy the idea of, hey, talk about a time where something like this happened to you, and you just get to respond in a fun and interesting way where you get to flex some of your gifts. Yeah, that's kind of what this book is a lot of. I very purposely set about the advice column structure and put it in this book so that I could maybe do some fun things with it that push the boundaries a little bit.
Mm-hmm. I definitely love prompts, you know, because I've mm-hmm. had columns before at internet outlets, and
famously,
as opposed to not famously, infamously, I'm sure.
Notoriously.
Okay,
yes.
I am on far too many hit lists, I'm sure, for any of my internet columns. I was on a hit list in high school, and you know, in retrospect, kind of dope.
No, listen, there is something to that. When the right people hate you, it can feel really great and do a lot of good for your brand. I remember when I wrote this one silly article for The Guardian. It was responding to that taco trucks on every corner thing that was said, that was like popping in the news back then. And I wrote something silly, yeah. Like, okay, yeah, this person sucks. Tacos are great, whatever. And then this white supremacist news site made me their target of the week. And their headline was like, mestizo faggot journalist in quotes, John Paul Bremer hates white America. And that's like gold. That's like something that you can show off and be like, wow, okay, this looks great for me. I made the white supremacist mad. So if it's the right kind of people, if you end up on their like hate list or whatever, sometimes that's all right.
I can't believe that a site like that still observes like journalistic practice of like, here's two adjectives before the person's name, except it's not like, you know, whatever. Legendary recording artist. It's mestizo faggot. Yeah.
you know they came from me, sis.
I remember.
There was also a period where, like, when I worked at MTV News, that the entire staff of MTV News was like the target of David Duke because of a video we didn't even do. Uh-huh. Someone else on the MTV team did a video about, like, how to talk to white people about like the election or something, and then David Duke was like, these MTV racists.
Good.
And he was constantly talking about MTV, which is so funny to me.
That one of the weird things about working in media is that like you see behind the curtain, so you know how all these things work, and then the audience really doesn't. So anytime something happens, they just like blame you for it immediately as if you had anything to do with it. I remember like I wrote this one essay for the Washington Post that was about Tumblr removing all its porn. And it was a pretty nuanced essay. I was pretty proud of it. And then the headline they ran was, rest in peace, Tumblr porn. You made me the man I am today. So everyone was just like quote tweeting it and being like, this is degenerate. I can't believe that the Washington Post would post something like this. And I was just like, oh, I have no control over this, actually.
Right. No, people don't understand that headlines are written by different people. Also,
exactly.
That like pictures are chosen by different people, too.
Very much.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So there's like four different conversations not occurring in concert a lot of the time when those are coming together.
I mean, truly would like to wipe out most of my articles that were at the Daily Beast, because no matter what I wrote, the headline would always be something wild. I think the wildest one was like, I wrote about Nicki Minaj's as a Barb, you know, about her Chun-Li video and about how some people were questioning whether or not it was culturally insensitive, right? And then the headline ends up being Nicki Minaj's disgusting Asian fetish.
No. My favorite tweet from Barb Twitter before that came out was, Nicki's appropriating culture is, it's over for y'all. She's about to go in. So true, though.
I mean, I always go back to saying that the original bitch to do it was Gwen Stefani. Nobody is appropriating like her.
At Chicanx, Gwen Stefani, absolutely.
How did
videos? Woof.
I mean, she really was taking your culture, JP. And you would look at her and you'd be like, "Wait, is I feel like growing up? Like, did a lot of people know that she was like just this white girl from Orange County, or like did they think that
she has
was,
songs
like,
about
Latina?"
It. Yeah.
Right. No, so that conversation came later. I remember just watching her growing up, and I was like, wow, a Mexican. Do it, Hermana. Prominent Chicana recording artist Gwen Stefani.
There are full videos, like the Luxurious video, where you were just like, oh, okay, this woman is Mexican. Like, she had the eyebrow, like, she had everything. Like,
and I remember being like
everything.
So confused by like the Harajuku girl thing that she was doing. I was like, I don't know who these people are, why she's always referencing them. That's just one of her silly little things. She's Gwen, she's wild, she's creative, who knows? This is like me in high school, by the way, just being like, yeah, seems normal. Okay, cool. Love the Rich Girl music video featuring Eve.
Oh, sure. Yes. Oh my God. No, but like the song Harajuku Girls, some of the lyrics in that, like, just wait till you get your little hands on LAMB. Gross. Boy.
I recently listened to the Orville Peck version of Born This Way, where he says Asian or Latinx made. And I was like, something about Orville Peck saying Latinx just like initiates a fight or flight from me. I don't know why. Love him. Love him. It sounded so strange coming out of his
mouth. I love him too. And when I heard that remix, I was like, absolutely not.
The X was just so pronounced.
It's like, I don't know how you made it sound more hateful than Chola or Orient made, which was the original line. And it's wild that Gaga kept performing that line till forever. And then Orville say Asian or Latinx made, I just heard it and was recoiled.
Yeah, I definitely just like had to stop the song for a second and be like, oh, I need to marinate in this for a second before I get my thoughts together. Really important, powerful moment for me.
My least favorite album of hers, Born This Way. To me, ooh. It's, well, actually, oh, sorry, Joanne. Mm. And also Cheek to Cheek.
But, oh, yeah. Yeah. Well.
So it's not actually your least favorite album. You just wanted to be incendiary.
That's, you got it. Speaking of writing for the Daily Beast, that's exactly what I was doing. Yeah.
In this industry, you got to be a firebrand sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Stir the kids up.
You give advice to people. Who gives the advice to the advisor?
Yeah, it's mostly my mom, and her advice is very simple. It's mostly just like, did you sleep? Did you take your Prozac? And the answer is always no. And it's like, well, do that and see how you feel. It's like, okay. None of my problems are terribly complicated. I'm always just, I have really bad anxiety, and I like to magnify it by drinking a lot of coffee, not sleeping at night, not taking my meds, and then I wonder what's wrong with me. I'm like, oh my God, why is my brain doing like one-handed flips right now? And it's always because I'm just doing something really simple incorrectly. Not a very complicated life I'm living at the moment, sadly.
I am always blown away to realize, like, I'm somebody who drinks a lot of coffee, like here's like a full carafe.
Yeah.
And I realize even if you have it at the beginning of the day, your sleep is so much better if you fucking get rid of coffee. And
I know.
Your anxiety is so much better. It's just unfortunately very painful because it's like it's a benign vice otherwise, you know.
But I need it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I need it. Yeah.
There was a period where I was a barista where I truly was mainlining espresso all day. and I felt, and I like never slept. I was like, why do I write at night all the time? Oh, it's because I cannot sleep.
Right.
The way your career is built on that espresso, that's beautiful.
It's a culture.
You had to grind, you know?
I tried to, when I was in New York recently, get a chai. I was like, I'm going to go off coffee. And I had like an iced chai that wasn't dirty. And I drank it, and I was like, well, this has done absolutely nothing for me.
Oh, good,
now,
milk.
Now I'm just yeah. like drinking sweet milk. So
that is
put
how
the
it feels.
Espresso back in it.
Yeah, because like the act of drinking coffee itself feels so productive because it just starts slapping your brain around. I love it.
You've taken on this advice column persona, and I actually think it's very wonderful because I feel like there's a dearth of like advice columns around. Truly, at least
yeah.
ones for like queer people, right?
Yeah, yeah,
you
yeah.
know, I feel like I remember advice columns from the newspaper when we were younger, like Dear Abby and stuff, right? But it's mm-hmm. like we weren't reading them. At least I wasn't.
Right.
I'd sometimes read them and I'm like, I don't know what's going on with this middle-aged divorced woman in Arkansas who just wrote into Abby. I don't relate to that. But what's next? You know, like, do you want to keep doing advice for people, even if you're going to branch out into other writing?
So I do think at some point I'm going to retire Hola Poppy, only because I am trying to walk as quickly as I can away from digital media, just because I think it's been a lot for me. I've sort of been through the ringer on that, and it's been great. It's given me a lot of things, but, you know, if I can just be an author from now on, that would be really great for me, because this has all been less stressful than posting op-eds and essays and trying to make sure that I have a job next month and wondering if this whole website's going to collapse within a year. That stuff is really stressful to me, and I think my next project is probably going to be fiction. Mm-hmm. We'll see if I'm any good at that. I don't know. I'm working on it. But yeah, I think that at some point I'll have to retire Hola Poppy. It'll have to be Adios Poppy, and I don't know what that's going to look like. Maybe I just won't. Maybe I'll just stop doing it for a while and bring it back whenever I feel like it, because getting the letters is so nice. Mm-hmm. Like, every once in a while, you refresh your inbox and you see that someone from another country has offered this little slice of their life to you in this letter. And it's cool. I get to see things and I get to understand things that I wouldn't ordinarily do. So it's going to be really hard to give up if and when I give it up.
I do want to say Adios Poppy would be a great advice column.
Yeah, I like that too. They've done a lot of good branding
today. That
turns
into a fictional murder mystery about Poppy being murdered. So
yeah,
half fiction, half advice column. That's a free idea, JP.
It might just be like the Substack headline for when I make my heel turn and I'm eventually over and I have to just be like, Adios Poppy, and everyone quote tweets it like, good riddance. That's just what I see for Hola Poppy. I don't know, like, trash, good, you're gone.
I used to do weekly videos for the site years ago that used to be called After Elton. It had since turned into other things. When I left, people were mostly nice, and I did get one comment that was good riddance, and I'll never forget it. Good riddance. I'm like, also, it's like, I'm just going to another internet site or something. Like, I'm not going far. Anyway, moving on.
No, that's the thing, is that people think it's this big dramatic thing when you leave a job. It's just like, media is just one job. We're just scurrying around to different offices and different CMS systems or whatever. It's like, it's not that big a deal, actually.
You know what? I'm used to celebrations once you leave a internet site. Half the people sad, half the people very happy that I am no longer on Twitter.com.
Oh, that's right.
The polarizing our Madison III.
Yes.
Absolutely.
JP, thank you for being here.
What a pleasure.
For writing such a wonderful book. Hola Poppy is out now wherever you get your books. I don't know. The Strand. Is that still open?
It's still open.
Did we save the Strand?
Little event with them tonight.
Okay.
Very exciting.
Good. I'm glad that she's alive.
Also, the book is literally out today as we record it, right?
It is. Yes. Out. Mm-hmm. It's day one of the book being out.
Okay. I saw your New York Times review. Okay.
Oh my God. Thank God.
Yeah. You're in the New York Times holding a rabbit. I think that is truly every writer's dream, to hold a rabbit and to also be in the New York Times.
Yeah, I woke up to a text being like, your New York Times book review is in. I was like, that's a really morbid way to word that. Is something bad just happened to me?
Was there a period in that sentence too?
Yes. Who does that?
Your New York Times book review is in. Period. That's like, ooh, ellipses. They hated that.
They hate this book. Wow. And now everyone's going to know. No, thank God it was positive. I don't know. I don't have it in me to get trashed in the New York Times like that.
Oh. Oh. Well, but this was great.
Thank you for having me. I can't wait to read both of your books when they come out, when you write them. When you pitch them, whatever that may look like.
When I staple tweets like coupons to each other. Yeah,
right. I would read that.
The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place, so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month, so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit, track budgets, and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Celebrities, they're just like us. They want to fuck too, baby. But an increasing number of celebrities are resorting to NDAs for their potential lovers to sign.
Mm-hmm.
And it's constantly being talked about on, you know, like Instagram accounts like De Moi. And there was recently a BuzzFeed piece that dove into the world of celebrity NDAs for their sexual partners, written by Haley Lieberman. What do we think about this?
Well, it's to me, what's mostly weird is that it's not the information's coming out now, since there's always been a standard version of this throughout the ages. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
You can't talk about, for instance, Tom Cruise without bringing up the amount of paperwork it takes to even know Tom Cruise.
Right. They want to party with the Cruise. They're going to have to sign a non-disclosure.
Right, yeah.
Katie Holmes!
Ask Nazanin Boniadi about signing some paperwork. Yeah.
Oh, God.
Nicole Kidman, tell us about your marriage. Bitch, you think she's trying to get sued?
I can't.
You'll never see her again. Yeah, I can't.
She's just, honestly, pretty raw.
Pretty raw.
Yeah, nice.
There are certain things we reference constantly in our lives, Ira and me specifically, and one of them is Nicole Kidman's 73 questions. So you need to just have these all memorized for when you come back to keep it, everybody, including you, Aya.
All right, I'll throw in the Elizabeth Taylor AD video.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. It's a good one.
If you memorize Victoria Beckham's 73 questions, you will know why sometimes I just turn to my friends and say, AIDS.
Yes.
Oh, that's why you did that.
Yes.
She's
asked,
what's
the one thing in the what's the one thing that you wish you could get rid of in the world? And she turns around and says, AIDS.
Yeah. She even says it kind of blunter than that, like AIDS.
Reminder, these answers are pre-written.
Yes.
I will say that I'm of two minds about celebrity sex NDAs. One, I would never sign one.
That's a lie.
I feel depends who it is, baby.
Yeah, I just want to know if like if a young Timothy came trouncing around and wanted you, and there was paperwork involved, you're just saying, maybe I picked the wrong person. I don't know who you're sexually attracted to.
I'm sexually attracted to Timothy Chalamet. In theory, I think I'm actually more attracted to his fashion sense.
Well, girl, you can't fuck his clothes,
which might not even be his fashion sense.
Yeah. Who's his stylist?
Right.
Okay. Mm-hmm. What little nigga he got, you know, up in Crown Heights, who's getting him up on the kids.
Who's all the sweat equity, pulling Carhartt overalls and beanies all day,
running,
every day
running
in the
thrift shops to get Celine pieces for Timothy. He loves a Celine and a New Balance. But also, I'm of the mind that getting people to sign one seems fine to me.
Yeah.
Because we are in a world where I mentioned De Moi, right? Like any celebrity like has any random encounter with someone now, like this person is running to the internet to like write about their interaction with that person. And I think it's weird. So I would not want people talking about like what we do in the bedroom.
I have two things about it as well. The first one being that I don't mind if people ask for NDAs. I would sign one depending on what we're doing and who I'm with. But it's the matter of when along the night you ask me to sign an NDA, are we inebriated? Have things already been sexually, has the tension been high? Like there's another level of power dynamic and abuse that could happen in that signing of the paperwork. So that's an interesting fold to it.
I absolutely agree with that. I think that if you are signing NDAs, it should be just like the paperwork scene in 50 Shades of Grey.
Exactly. When it's cold, stoic, callous, still, nothing sexual.
And you are like, here's okay, what about this provision? Okay, no, I'm not doing that, et cetera. I think that's hot.
Oh, this anal clause, take it out. Okay, moving forward.
That is interesting. I mean, it is legal paperwork, so it does sort of feel like you should have a lawyer there for it.
Truly.
Don't just give me an NDA as I'm walking into your home. Like, I want to read this shit. I want to know what I can and can't talk about.
Right. All right, well, this just got more difficult for me, and I'm now thinking about who I would go the distance for, shall we say.
Okay, Hercules.
Hercules.
Okay, Justin Long and Drew Barrymore. Yeah.
I also am wondering now, because there's a culture of NDAs that has changed. Like, even 5 or 6 years ago, when we found out that Charlie Sheen was potentially giving other women NDAs to sign before sex, it was like, ew, gross, what are you doing?
Mm-hmm.
But now, when Beyonce has an NDA and she's making Tiffany Haddish sign it before they go hang out, it's like, okay, girl, what are y'all doing? Like, you know, there's just, it's very dependent on who has the NDA and what the culture of that person's identity includes.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's stuff where it's like, you find out that someone bit Beyonce on the face, right?
Nah, Tiffany and Beyonce are fucking. Don't take it from me.
And that makes me think about, you know, just like the random nights where we hang out with our friends, right? And like someone does something that's goofy, or like something that like becomes like a story that we like constantly reference. And I guess if we're all celebrities and a friend does that, you don't want that story circulating so it becomes like a thing that's like in page 6 or something, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's why you sign an NDA.
That makes me wonder, it's like somebody who hangs out with a lot of celebrities, I mean, and is a celebrity themselves, like, is Busy Phillips constantly signing NDAs just based on the people she's around? I want to know.
Mm. Mm. Does Michelle make her sign one?
That's part of the question, yeah.
It's like, here's a drink, here's an NDA.
I have never been asked to sign one with anyone that I've hung out with, for the record. So
I've signed multiple NDAs.
I've only signed them when I've gone on game shows, because you can't like give away the result of what happened. Yeah,
mine aren't for hanging out. Mine are for like Marvel auditions where I'm the secretary and they're like, don't tell anyone that we're making
movies.
I did
sign a heavy NDA to go into Marvel.
God, you can't even think about Marvel without signing an NDA.
I don't even think I was supposed to tell people I wrote that Black Panther thing.
That Black Panther thing.
Thing.
No, that reminds me of when we had Kat Dennings on, and she talked about having to go for her audition for, I think it was WandaVision, far away from a building, and then was like carted there by a mysterious interloper person, in which case she signed something else. They're just like layers and layers of bureaucracy and strangeness to even participating in that universe.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, what celebrity would y'all sign an NDA for to hang out with?
Oh, just to hang out with. Okay.
Just to hang out with. And then I want to know what celebrity you would sign an NDA to fuck.
Okay, great. To hang out with, I mean, like, it would have to be pretty anthropological in nature. I would want to be like, I would need to study the person. Like, it would be satisfying for me to study the person. It probably wouldn't be an act of friendship I was seeking. Like, I do believe I should hang out with Madonna one time. I'm not saying it's going to go well for me, nor am I saying I'm going to come out of it psychologically unscathed. But I do, I need to get the information firsthand, as opposed to like the behind the music-y talking heads being circumspect and guessing how she behaves, you know?
Baby, that's going to be how you end up floating dead in the pool, okay? The night you meet Madonna is your Sunset Boulevard.
Which reminds me, you know, Andrew Lloyd Webber wanted her to start in the reboot of Sunset Boulevard when they made it into a musical movie.
I would have watched that in an instant.
That would be crazy.
Evita 8. Okay, I am just going to put that out there. Evita is that girl.
Yeah, I do. I enjoy it, Evita. A 3-star film for me, but I enjoy it.
Yeah, okay. What celebrity to hang out with, Aida?
To hang out with, I'm really, really struggling to think, because I don't feel like these people don't be doing fun shit. I don't know.
Right. Who's fun? I don't have a sense of who's fun. Yeah.
Who's fun? You know, I would say the fuck one came to me very, very easily. If Daniel Kaluuya wanted to serve me any type of paper, I would just look it up and I wouldn't even read it. I'll sign it. I don't care. You want my limbs? You want to remove my limbs? No Army Hammer. You just want to have them? That's fine. You can have them. Anything that you want. Daniel Kaluuya. Did I tell you guys recently? This is so unfortunate. But I was driving, and it was right before the Oscars, actually. It was like the day before the Oscars, and I was driving down Melrose, and I had been talking about Daniel Kaluuya moments before, and then I pull up to the intersection, and I turn to my right, and guess who's in his little black SUV looking sexier than ever? Mm-mm-mm. Daniel Kaluuya.
Oh, wow.
It was so odd. I felt like I manifested him. Girls, settle down. Sit
down. Did you splay yourself on the glass like one of those Garfield sticker things that people put on the window?
I couldn't help it. My tits were out. They were pressed up against the glass. No, I just looked at him and mouthed, I love you, and he gave me the most subtle, cool peace sign and just carried on, went forward. The light was green. I hadn't noticed.
You know what? I would sign an NDA to party with Rihanna.
Ooh. Definitely.
Yes. Okay, Azealia.
Because I think she would be cool, too. I mean, like, can you believe it? That's my take. She's probably cool. But it would
most,
be worth
like,
it.
Top celebrity to, like, party with, I feel like.
Yes, that's a great answer. That's the answer.
Mm-hmm.
I'm stealing a Twitter meme now. My favorite oldies artist, Rihanna. Because everything she's released is years and years old, yes.
I mean, listen, we're here, only girl in the world on easy listening, okay?
It's a yacht rock classic now, yes.
Okay, which one would you sign an NDA to have sex with, Lewis?
Oh, God, so hard. But let me just say, I don't really find myself pining for celebrity men, really.
You sign an NDA to fuck Jane Fonda for sure.
I think Jane Fonda would be fucking me if we're going to put it.
I was going to say, yeah. She'd be on hour four and you'd be done.
But I'm weeping. Yeah. Her delts are only getting stronger throughout. Good. I don't know. In that case, I don't really have an answer for that. Nobody is coming to mind where I'm like, I'm that desperate for it. Sex shouldn't feel distant or strange or elusive. I believe it's a social thing, and you should have it naturally with and without paperwork involved.
Oh, aww. Shut up!
Shut the fuck up, Lewis.
Shut the fuck up.
I don't even know what I was saying. I just
oh, straight edge bastard.
I would side one in an instant for Ricky Martin.
Oh, okay. Well, fabulous answer.
Un India.
Yeah.
Un India.
Yes.
By the way, can I just say there should be a word, maybe a German word, for when you hear a pop song that used to be ubiquitous that you never hear anymore. I heard Live in La Vida Loca recently. I'm like, once upon a time, you could not obviously avoid that song, and now you never hear it. I felt the same way about, I just heard Havana by Camila Cabello recently. When do you hear that song anymore? And it used to be every day, all the time.
Yeah, but I feel like you need to create like a time distance because that feels so new, so recent. Mm-hmm. But I do agree with you. It needs to have a word. Mm-hmm. It needs to be like Music Freuda or something.
Yeah. No, like if you heard Bodak Yellow right now, wouldn't you be surprised?
Yeah. It's not.
I was shocked last night when I heard Can't Stop the Feeling playing.
Right. Exactly.
Wait, which Can't Stop the Feeling?
Justin Timberlake.
No, yeah.
Because I feel like they had just stopped playing it for a bit and then it played again. But you know what I want to point out? He ate the girls on that song.
Okay. He did.
Unfortunately,
he nibbled the girls. He nibbled the girls.
He ate the girls.
He chomped.
Baby.
He chomped.
The girls, wish
the girls
that they had Can't Stop the Feeling. Okay. That song was you everywhere. Okay. He ate the girls up.
Girl,
he really did.
The girls were at a back to school sale at Kohl's with that song. Okay, bitch. And they were hungry. Yeah.
I was in a car with a young man, and he just he casually put on Happy by Pharrell. And I tucked and rolled out of the car. There was no way.
That's terrorism.
That's not okay.
That is. I would think that I was about to be taken to be murdered.
You know what I will say about that? Maybe Lupita Nyong'o's most impressive performance when she got up and danced to Pharrell's Happy, and it didn't look bad at all. Like not a song that like makes you want to dance in a way that belongs outside of like a white wedding, you know?
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm.
Actually, final answer, I would sign an NDA to hang out with and or have sex with Tom Cruise. I may die, but I think it'd be worth it.
Well, the paperwork would be part of the kink in that situation because he's just within a castle, within a tower, within a whatever. So
yeah, you got to fight like Ludwig von Bowser to get to Tom Cruise.
Ludwig von Koopa, but yes.
King.
All right, well, if you're a celebrity who would like any of us to sign an NDA,
hit us up.
You know how to reach us.
Call me,
Keep
beat
it
me
at crooked.com.
If you
want
to fuck me.
Okay, Aida is ready to lick box.
Bin. No PDA, though. Yes, NDA, but no PDA. Don't touch me in public.
All right, well, we're back. Keep it. And we're back with our favorite segment of the episode. It is Keep It. What are we keeping this week, loves?
Aida, you go.
I'll go. Okay, mine's small. Mine's small and irritated. And I know that I know that this is going to be a problem. So I just want to get it out of the way now.
Mm.
The mask mandate in Los Angeles is being lifted in nothing but a week. Okay. And I know I don't run in these circles, but I know the internet has a tricky way of just putting the worst content right in front of my fucking face and right in the middle of the timeline. So I need y'all to have zero celebration about the masks being removed. I don't want to see y'all throwing them away. I don't want to see parties where you're burning them. I don't want to see bonfires on the beach, you throwing your mask in it, all happy, like, we're done, we've celebrated. People still died. People still died. And frankly, a lot of you need to keep wearing your mask. I don't want to see your face. I don't. I have no interest. I don't want to see you out smiling. I loved the social interaction where I had no idea who was looking at me, wanted to talk to me. I loved it. Such a great excuse. Wonderful excuse to not wear makeup. You know what? I'm keeping the mask on is what I'm realizing through this. It's staying on. Just be careful.
I have no problem leaving behind this era unceremoniously. I will think of it historically as like Lady Gaga's cheek-to-cheek era. It wasn't for me, and it went on a little too long. That's it. And we don't need to talk about it again.
Just shove it under the rug.
You know what? I want to bring back like bra throwing at concerts, but it's like masks. Like I would throw my mask at Maluma.
Oh, wow. Now you brought up Maluma. That really jumps me back to the last conversation. Woof. Okay.
Yeah. I would sign an NDA to do whatever Maluma wanted, even if it was just, you know,
his taxes.
If it was just to watch the Patrick Star show. Okay. What's your keep it, Lewis?
My keep it is specific, as all the best ones are, I think. My keep it is to the dance moves during floor routines in women's gymnastics. We have been very inundated with wonderful Simone Biles content recently. I don't know if you heard, she got her 7th national title. She's, in my opinion, getting very good at gymnastics. And she like basically only does moves that are named after her at this point. Like she's so far ahead of the game. Like there's no rule book to what she does. She's so innovative, so athletic, impressive. Floor routines. Now, I'm not saying the dancing that occurs is necessarily bad, but it's such an unusual segue between incredibly impressive moves. It's like women, they have two jobs they have to do during a floor routine. One, the most impressive athletic achievements of all time. And then second, they have to dance like a gay toddler at recess. Because what is going on with this bizarre shimmying and bending over and booty shaking before they get back to the really just incredible athletic feats? Now, I just learned a term for this called the female apologetic, which refers to things women do in sports to sort of soften the hardness of athletic appearance. So, for instance, you might say, like, why do women have to dress in, like, spangled, cute outfits? Well, you could say that's part of the female apologetic, that in order to participate in sports, they still have a kind of, like, welcoming, cutesy look, you know? So, anyway, I just think it's a weird requirement for a sport that is otherwise just mind-bendingly fabulous in terms of athleticism. And I think it does undercut something about the sport.
Okay.
Damn, the girls can't be cute. It's gotta have that's real meaning. But I feel
like, I just think it's a weird requirement. You know what I mean? Like it's like in the middle of like a uneven bars routine, if you had to get up on the bar and do stand up. It just makes no sense.
Yeah. Yeah, and it does actually remind me of like when Gabby Douglas came onto the scene and the biggest critiques were like, her leotard and her flyaway hairs. And it's like, no, she should get to do and look however she wants.
Right.
All right. I mean, because men do.
Precisely.
Pete Sampras was so ugly.
But by the way, watch men's floor routines, and it's the most... If you watch the men's floor routines, they're so anesthetized and just, it's like hard move after hard move and then walking to the corner to do another move. Like there's no obligation for like artistic bossa nova segues or whatever.
Yeah.
Well, if I'm watching men's gymnastic, baby, I'm not thinking about the dance moves. All okay. Right.
Okay. I don't need to know what you're thinking about. It's fine. But all right.
Also,
subjectify them.
Also, I do want to apologize. Pete Sampras was very cute.
He was so cute. Oh, I thought you were kidding. Yeah.
Oh, I don't know. These girls, sometimes they need clarification.
Got it.
Someone's up in your mentions being like, why do you hate Pete Sampras? I don't know. He could slap me with his tennis racket.
Ira, what's your keep it?
You know what? My keep it is to the recent Netflix special, Inside, by Bo Burnham.
Oh, why?
Because he's just so damn cute.
Oh, the fake out. Oh, fake out, Ira. Oh, you had us.
Keep it to him for being fantastic.
Uh-huh.
Like, truly fantastic. And talking openly about his anxiety, but then, like, overcoming it and being, like, an amazing actor in Promising Young Woman. And then the special, which is hilarious. And also far too horny.
Interesting.
And it's like, turn on in a way that, like, I don't find, like, straight men
usually capable of,
you know, desirable. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What's interesting about that special, which I saw, is that I didn't think I wanted any mementos, as I said before, from the COVID era.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of this is really like, here I am in a darkened, weird space, coming up with comedy, hating the stillness and nothingness of life right now. But enough is so funny about it that is unforgettable. I think my favorite part of the whole special, and it gets into deeper territory. This is sort of a lighter moment. He has a song about white women's Instagrams, which you would normally think, did we do this already? Is it 2014? And then he gets to a part in the song where he goes through the things white women write when a relative has died, like a parent, and what they write to the parent. It is so funny. It also makes you realize that there is totally a script to even our quote-unquote vulnerable moments online. You know, like if you watch a coming out video by a YouTube teen, you know exactly what you're going to get, down to the word, you know?
And, of course.
He really pointed something out with that. I thought it was really funny.
I mean, it's pride, you know? So like, even if it's heartfelt, you're always going to get a post from some gay who's like, you can already see the script in your head. It's, I was never comfortable, you know, being this gay and out before. And then it's like seven paragraphs later, it's like, baby, I just clicked like and kept it moving. You look cute in the photo, though.
Yeah. Welcome. What I loved about the special was that, like, just having Bo Burnham even return to the screen and be doing a special, it's been years since What and Make Happy and his thousands of YouTube videos that we all just injected into our veins. And he's been taking all this time directing and writing Eighth Grade, and he directed Gerard Carmichael's special. So it's just exciting to see him back on screen and doing what I know he is has a complicated relationship with but loves to do. So.
Mm-hmm. And I think my favorite part was a very queer relatable part. The part where he talks about texting with like a woman at night and then falling asleep. Because I think I was just talking with a friend last night about that whole concept of like you're on Grindr in your bed, and if you're drunk or like you're visiting a city somewhere, and then like you pass out and then you wake up and your phone's dead.
Oh,
definitely a thing that happens home all the time.
Yeah.
So, Bo Burnham.
Wonderful special. Yeah, the FaceTiming your mom clip was one of the most right to the gut relatable things. I sat there and was like, oh God, I have to call her again. I love calling her. I want to talk to her every day, but it's just another 20 minutes of what you making?
It is truly inane conversations that you have with him.
Yeah. Also, by the way, obviously a lot of what Bo Burnham does is putting this to music, and the songs themselves are just really good. I don't know. It's it makes me mad that he's just capable melodically of things too. You can't be both, you know, Kathy Griffin and then Phil Spector. Like, how does this work?
Yeah.
Anyway. And by that, I'm calling him a murderer. No.
Yeah. Do you think he's going to murder someone?
Played by Helen Mirren in the movie? Yeah.
I believe that Bo Burnham has murdered.
I do not. Okay.
No one's that nice. Okay.
Yeah, oh, okay. I like that take. Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, yeah. There's something there. There's something inside. I also want to commend him for, you know, transitioning from his YouTube career into, you know, what he's done now. You know, it was a little bit like our guest JP who we just talked to, but you know, it's like I think we're all people, the three of us too, who are artists who, you know, grew up on the internet. And there's a lot of people who've done that transitioning from internet into the art that they want to create. Mm-hmm. And what's funny is, like, as he's parodying a lot of things, you know, especially the one about, like, content, and the one with people doing those, like, YouTube response videos to a response video, or, like, describing something. It's like, these are all people who just, like, want to express themselves in some way, but the only way that they're able to is, like, some inane thing mm-hmm. on YouTube that nonetheless people like to watch. But cheers to people who escape inane internet things that they had to do and now get to create what they want.
The dreamers who dream. Yes. La La Land, we speak your name.
All right. We'll see you next week. Keep It is a Crooked Media production. The show is produced by Caroline Reston, and Brian Semmel is our associate producer. Our executive producer is Ira Madison III. I think I've heard of him. Our editor is Bill Lance, and Kyle Seglin is our sound engineer. Thank you to our digital team, Matt DeGroot, Nar Melkonian, and Milo Kim for production support every week. Stay safe. Be blessed. God loves you.